Hey, everybody. Welcome to Stale Bubblegum. Great guest today. It's always a good morning when you start out interviewing a former Montreal Expo. I am rocking my Vlad Guerrero shirt. He is one of the voices of the Houston Astros. Jeff Blum, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. This time change is messing with my sleep pattern, but I'm glad to be here.
I hear you. I have insomnia anyway, so this has been awesome the past couple
geez.
Of days. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. Yeah, just waiting for the season to get going, but I'm doing well.
So how's it been so far? I mean, obviously, everyone's talking about pitch clock and these changes. And I mean, that's the first question I ask everybody, because that's what's on everyone's mind. And it's accomplishing what it was set out to do, which is obviously the games are moving a lot quicker. Do you see any drawbacks to the pitching clock, the pitch clock?
I think early on there have been some drawbacks, just because I'm watching pitchers rush a little bit. I'm watching hitters rush a little bit. Routines have changed. Obviously in the booth, there's a rhythm to the game, and, you know, being a slight traditionalist, there's a rhythm and a rhyme to the game that is kind of disrupted a little bit. And I think you're right in the point that, you know, Rob Manfred wanted to speed this game up, but I think ultimately, is it going to put more eyes on the game, or is it going to attract a little more attention? And that's what I'm kind of curious to see, you know, moving forward into the regular season, when we start to get these regular rosters out there and they start to use that clock, and you start to see, you know, the team that you're accustomed to seeing out there adjusting to that clock. That's where I'll be kind of fascinated to see if these guys are able to adjust to it. We had a chance to call a WBC game that went 3 hours and 45 minutes. And it was about that 3 hour mark. You're going, yeah, I think this game could end right now. It'd be okay. But again, you know, it's the clock, it's the quality of pitching, you know, our strikes being thrown, that encourages more contact. But I think it's our game now. It's a part of it. And the players are going to adjust because they like the paycheck, they like the game, and we're all just going to have to work around it.
So what have you seen, you know, from the Astros so far? Like, had there been any surprises? Have you seen any play? I mean, a lot of teams, I watch the Mets a lot, and a lot of their young players are obviously getting, I mean, it seems like half the team is in the WBC right now. So you're seeing like a lot of their younger guys getting a lot of opportunities. What's been the case with the Astros?
I'm in the same boat. You know, we're calling some of these games early on in spring, which are tough anyways, because usually the veteran guys take their time to move into some of these games. But you had a couple of guys ramping up for the World Baseball Classic, and now you're watching a team without their regulars, without these guys that are trying to get ready for the regular season because they're gone. And you're right, you get to see some of these guys. And I think the craziest thing for me, you know, obviously my bias is with the Astros, having worked for them for the last 10 years and appreciating what they're doing. But, you know, you read all the reports, their farm reports, you know, one of the last couple of ones in the organization, or in organizational rankings these days, because of all the trades they've had to make and drafting, you know, 30th and every year because of the way they're playing. But I sit there and I'm watching some of these guys and I'm going, this guy's a pretty legit prospect. He has an opportunity. You know, you still got Hunter Brown waiting in the wings. Forrest Whitley's waiting to develop and get himself into the big leagues. You've got some outfielders. You know, Justin Dearden is a guy that kind of jumped onto the scene, and you sit back and you're going, there's a real opportunity for the Astros to have more players come through this system and contribute and help to this winning culture that's going on right now. And it's just fascinating to me in this day and age that you can have a team that has won or has gone to 6 straight American League championship games, and then they have gone to 4 World Series, won 2 of them. They were 7 outs away from winning a third one in 2019, and yet there's still some talent in this organization waiting to push their way through and break through some of these barriers to get to the show. And it's just remarkable this day and age, with the loyalty and the way some of these front offices work, to still have this winning culture kind of perpetuate itself.
Yeah. And you know, you mentioned just how this team is stacked to just not, and they picked up Abreu in the offseason. I feel like the teams who competed last year are going to compete again. And obviously a lot of the teams who were kind of on the cusp got better. But do you see anyone challenging the Astros? I know you did mention your bias, and obviously rightfully so. but do you see anyone like within their division? I mean, obviously the Astros are the favorites for everything again. I don't see anyone remotely close to them.
No, I agree. And it, you know, all the baseball prospectus, fan graphs, all these projections are showing the Astros are going to win 95 plus games. The second place team is going to have about 88, 89 wins. But yeah, I think that they're still the team to beat in the West. I know the Seattle Mariners have made some great adjustments. Their starting rotation is going to be very strong. I'm a huge fan of Julio Rodriguez. I think that he is going to be one of those generational type talents when he gets going and figures it out at the big league level, because he's an Adonis. He's extremely strong. He's fast. He plays a great center field, and the swing is beautiful. But, you know, do they have enough around him to be able to go out there and score enough runs to compete against the Astros pitching staff? And I don't think the offense is there. I think their pitching staff is good. The Angels are trying. The Texas Rangers are trying. But again, they're just not those well-rounded teams that are going to be able to go out there and upset what the Astros are doing. I think the Seattle Mariners are going to make it interesting. I love the fact that within this American League West division that they've kind of created that rivalry. You know, it kind of started last season. You know, they start throwing at each other. They start beating, you know, each other. That record evens out a little bit. And then you go to the division series and have it be as tight as it was. Even though the Astros swept, it was still a very tight margin that they beat them with. So I think there's a lot of things in that Seattle Mariner, Houston Astros rivalry that I really enjoy. And I think kind of bring some fun back into that American League West, because for so long, like we were just talking about it, it has been dominated by the Houston Astros.
Talk to me a little bit. I mean, so much is made and you know, watching it as a fan, talk to me a little bit about Dusty Baker. I mean, obviously he came at the right time and I think, and I'm not saying anything new. It's not like I'm saying anything extraordinary here. If anyone was going to shake the stigma of the whole trash can and all of whatever the signs and all that garbage, mm-hmm. literal garbage, it was really Dusty Baker. Watching him daily, what is it about him that makes him so good? And I know it's such a generic question, but mm-hmm. I mean, you really have more insight than most people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first thing, like you said, he was brought here. The first reason he was brought here was to really put somebody at the forefront of this controversy and force the media and force fans to really look at Dusty Baker and realize that he is going to front this team and everything that he brings in. And Jim Crane brought him in because he is Dusty Baker. He is generational in this game. He spent 40 or 50 years in the game. You know, started playing his career in the South as an African-American player behind Hank Aaron, learned everything about the game from Hammer and Hank, and then developed a career of his own when he got to the Dodgers and became an all-star, became an NLCS MVP, a World Series champion, and then developed into a coach with the San Francisco Giants and started to lead these guys on a big league diamond. And he has been very successful ever since he's moved into that managerial position. But the amount of experience and the leadership that this organization needed at that time, because the culture was broken with some of the issues with the sign stealing, and Dusty Baker just kind of calmed the shores a little bit. And it was really hard for media members to come after him because he's such a gracious ambassador of the game of baseball, that the Astros needed that. And he kind of deflected a lot of attention away from a lot of the negativity. And actually I've watched him develop into an even better manager than he was before, because this is a highly analytic age. He became the coach of a highly analytic organization, and he's adapted amazingly. And I think that you're really starting to see him reap the benefits of sowing that trust in that clubhouse and being that leader. And deflecting a lot of the negative energy that was bringing in there, because Dusty showed up into this clubhouse and he said, "They're going to say a lot of things about you guys. but you guys are good ball players. We're going to go out there and prove it on a daily basis. And he really gave them an avenue to go out there and just play the game and not focus on what was being said about him. And that's why he's got his first World Series championship. He's amazing. And I couldn't be more proud of him. I mean, he is a great individual. And if you ever have a bottle of wine and need a story told, grab Dusty Baker. You'll be there for hours. He's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, I could only imagine. I want to go back to your playing days. Did you, you played for a number of teams. Did you have a manager who sticks out that huge influence on you?
There were actually a couple of them. You know, when I first got called up in Montreal, it was because Orlando Cabrera broke his ankle and, I would happen to be playing shortstop at the time. So it was just, you know, fortuitous timing, unfortunately for Orlando, but fortunately for me. But when I got called up, you know, I'm a 6'4", you know, not your prototypical shortstop. And Felipe Alou pulled me in his office the day I got called up and he said, we got a problem at shortstop and you're going to be my guy. And I said, let's go. So I'm always going to be grateful for Felipe Alou really, you know, taking a chance on somebody that maybe not that prototypical shortstop and gave me the opportunity, because if Felipe doesn't give me that opportunity at shortstop, I don't become the utility player I was later on, because everybody's going to go, oh, he's too big to play shortstop. But he gave me the chance to play there about 60 games at the end of 1999. And my career just kind of took off after that and established myself as a big league player. And, you know, Bruce Bochy in San Diego is one of the more player friendly coaches or managers that I had. And I mean that in the sense that he kind of did his homework. He knew who I was successful against, even though I was a utility guy on his, you know, 06 or 05, 06 teams. He always knew the, you know, certain guys that I played well against, he put me in, or if the game was getting out of hand, he knew that I needed at bats as a guy sitting on the bench. So he'd always mix us in. So I always appreciated Bruce Bochy for the opportunities he kind of created on those Padre teams I was on too.
Where do you keep your ring? From 05. Just curious.
I've got a safe in the house downstairs next to the office, and I've got it sitting in there resting gently and nicely in the comfort of the security of that safe. Yeah.
How often do you look at it?
I look at it quite a bit. You know, it's always one of those things. If you have somebody new over the house or you're entertaining and people always go, let me see it. You know, they always, you know, it's like bringing that unicorn out of the wilderness and going, check this thing out. You know, I got one. And, so I look at it every once in a while. I probably don't wear it as often as I could or should. You know, my wife's always like, wear the ring, you know, but it's kind of tough here in Houston to wear that ring every once in a while.
It's kind of cooler than an Oscar because you can actually wear it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it'd be kind of tough to put that Oscar in like my front pocket and have that thing walking around, right? Yeah, I agree.
You miss the playing days or is it, it's kind of cool just to be immersed in baseball, like still.
Yeah, no, I'm blessed in that sense that, you know, I can fill the void of playing by calling games. So I'm still, like you said, I'm very immersed in the game. I'm still around the guys. I get to, you know, rub shoulders with, Bregman and Tucker and some of these guys and talk baseball. And then I get to sit there and watch it with the fans, which is become a lot more fun just because of the stress level is gone. I get to enjoy the game for what it is and how it's played and how good these guys are these days. But, you know, I think I do miss playing. I miss the idea and the feeling of standing in the middle of a diamond or digging into a box and realizing that there's 30 to 40,000 fans just waiting to see what you're going to do next. You know, I know I wasn't one of those superstar guys, but I still had the opportunity to stand in that box quite a bit and enjoy, some of that hard work paying off. But that was, you know, that was a thrill being in front of that many people, because even I was waiting to see what would happen. Were they going to boo me? Were they going to cheer me? You know, who was I going to high five after a good play? There's a lot of stuff that was on that field that I do truly miss, but very lucky to still be around the game.
Yeah. I always remember you as kind of a pain in the butt. in terms of always kind of getting on base and just like I said, I follow the Mets and I just remember you kind of being like one of those scrappy pains in the butts that kind of always managed to get on base.
I actually greatly appreciate that, because like I said, there was really no expectation because I wasn't that superstar, that marquee guy, but you're going, damn, this guy came up again. I enjoyed that feeling. And I actually had a funny story, because when I first got in the booth, we went through we went into Arizona, and Bob Brenly's was the color guy. Just got the color job for the Arizona Diamondbacks. And I remember playing against Bob when he was managing the Cubs. And Cubs were another team that I just happened to find myself in positions every once in a while to have an impact on the game. And we're walking through the press dining area, and he looks at me and he goes, "Blum?" And I said, "Yeah, Bob." I go, "Bran, what's going on? You know, nice to see you. It's glad to be up here. Good to be a part of this whole, you know, this different side of the game." He goes, "So you're retired?" And I go, "Yeah." And he goes, "Thank effing God." He goes, "I got sick and tired of seeing your ass come up here, you know, in some situations when I was with the Cubs." So, yeah, I appreciate being that thorn back in the day. Yeah, I had my moments, even though they were few and far between.
Yeah, no, I remember those moments. So we started the interview with my absolutely obscure, like, Montreal Expos introduction. So I want to end it with, do you think we'll see baseball return in Montreal? I'm kind of making it seem that I'm this diehard Expos fan. I'm not, but I am just such an appreciator of, like, old school baseball. And I would love to see it return.
I'm with you. And it's okay to be that, you know, that nostalgic Expo fan, I think, yeah. You know, because I do get, I think a lot of that nostalgia. I'm not sure what the appropriate word is. And, but there's a certain respectability that I get for knowing that I played for the Expos for some reason. You know, there's almost a, you know, there at the time it wasn't a love affair, but now there's a little bit more of a love affair with the city and with the team that played there in the Montreal Expos. And I just don't think they were there long enough to really establish themselves as one of those, you know, one of those teams in Montreal. I think this day and age, it would probably be a little bit easier. So I'm with you in the sense that if they are thinking of expansion, I hope they seriously consider Montreal. I think the location is great. I think the culture is amazing. You know, it's in Quebec where they still speak French. You know, there was something about playing there and playing, you know, the national anthem in French, having your name announced in French, you know, there was getting yelled at in French. I mean, it was a unique experience and a great time. And I just think it was the, you know, if they could get out of the Big O and really build, you know, something similar to what the San Francisco Giants have done or what the Pittsburgh Pirates have done, you know, something, you know, a beautiful stadium with a great view of the city and put it on the river, you know, in there in Montreal and really create an atmosphere where it's intimate. I think that would fit in Montreal and make it a great ballpark. But yeah, it better be in, if it's not in the rotation, it better be strongly considered. But I'm with you in the sense that going back up there would really revive a lot of that great history that was in Montreal, because there were phenomenal players that went through there. You know that for over the years, amazing players.
I think the Expos are one of those things that the fans appreciated them after they were gone.
Unfortunately, yes. I completely agree. Yep.
Yeah. Jeff, I appreciate you. I really do. This is great.
No, it's always good. I appreciate it. Yeah. I mean, the best part about these podcasts is that you're going to get asked questions that, you know, the standard cliche boring media is not going to ask you. And that's why I love doing these things. It's great to be on. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, man.